everybody. Welcome to another episode of Supernatural George. I'm Mittens, and today we are going to be talking about the Season 6 finale, Season 6, Episode 22, The Man Who Knew Too Much, written by Eric Kripke, the final episode that he will write for Supernatural, and directed by Robert Singer. Sam is a puzzle, and he's got to put himself together again. Unfortunately, one of the biggest pieces keeps yelling at him. Yeah, I have a hard time watching this one. My personal dealings with identity issues makes it really hard for me to talk about Sam's experiences in this one. So in the interest of not triggering myself, I'm going to stick to the understanding of this episode that allows me to not trigger myself, and hopefully everyone can understand why. The structure of this episode is fitting, though. It's sort of how we were given all the big reveals of Season 6, being given little clues here and there that make no sense out of context, in much the same way that Sam must try to figure out who he is, as a person, even, from nonsensical clues that he gathers throughout the episode. Season 6 opened with Dean having to piece together what was happening while being given nothing actually useful to work with. But at least his issues were all external. Poor Sam's are all going on inside his own head. And while Sam's wall has crumbled, so has the metaphorical wall that Cass had tried to build around Dean for his own protection. Things are just not going well for any of them. And at least with this one, we finally reached the true end of Kripke's era on the show. And hello, Godsteel, and honestly, just what a mess. I mean, I personally still have difficulty remembering if scenes happened in this one or in the next one in Season 7, Episode 1, because they feel like they should be one long episode. So at least we'll get it sorted by the end of this one, what we've already covered and what is yet to come. Just one last thing to mention, since we are at the end of the season, if you are watching on Blu-ray or DVD, there are special features on this disc, including a 30-minute featurette about the soul and what that means in Supernatural, and I have not watched it because I haven't had time this week because this was my anniversary week so that I'm recording this, and so I didn't want to get behind and lose a week, but I also haven't delved into it. There's another, like, Hunters and Hunting featurette that has a bunch of different, like, click around and discover hunting and stuff. You could spend hours, apparently, fiddling around in it. There's behind-the-scenes stuff and how they make the show. And there's also, of course, the gag reel, which everybody always loves and is always worth 10 minutes of your life to watch if you've got access. And with all of that said, let's head straight into the road so far. We start with Sam falling into the pit at the end of Season 5 and Dean all bloodied and broken, and then his year with Lisa and Ben being normal guy until Sam came back. And it wasn't really quite Sam. There was something really wrong with Sam because he had no soul. Dean's deal with death to get Sam's soul back. We then traipse through various monsters and fights that they've had over the season, ending with Crowley trying to find Purgatory, the reminder of Eve coming out of Purgatory. Crowley wants the souls and their power. We even have Balthazar reminding us, do you even know what souls are worth? Cass telling them Raphael and his followers want him to rule heaven. The last thing we want is for him to take over, because he wants to restart the apocalypse. Which is a tiny little tidbit that Sam, Dean, and Bobby actually don't know. So when they find out that Cass has been working with Crowley to get that power for himself, his plea of, I can stop Raphael, you just have to let me do this, falls on kind of deaf ears, because they don't get that it's not just some petty war in heaven, that it would spill over onto the earth and directly onto them. And those stakes are still invisible and unknown to them. I don't know if Cass ever tells them. But that's where we come to now. in a very confusing scene of Sam running down the street with police sirens and blurry lights everywhere. Like, he can't even focus on what's around him. He's just running. He's apparently trying to evade the police and breaks into a door marked delivery entrance only. It's the back door to a bar that happens to be closed. The only person inside is the bartender. And a glowing El Sol sign that sort of we can only see the reflection of in the glass behind where Sam is hiding. The bartender seems to figure it out that Sam is hiding from the police when she tries to ask him to leave. And she is like, okay, well, yeah, I don't need this. Just take whatever you want and leave me alone. Leave me out of it. Sam looks helpless and innocent enough to her, though, that she lets him stay when he begs, just until he can figure out what's going on. She asks his name, and he doesn't know. And just like Cass will say, when he regains his memories, Sam doesn't remember anything. And that line always bookends to me with Cass in 717. I remember you. I remember everything. Well, this is Sam. He doesn't remember anything, not even his name. And then we cut to the title card. After the title card, not only does she open and hand him an El Sol beer, he's sitting at a bar stool and right behind him is the great big El Sol sign. None of this is reality, and Sam has no idea. He thinks he's engaging with all of this in good faith. And us, the viewers, think, wow, I wonder how he got here. Are we going to get like a 24 hours earlier or something? But no. We're going to get filled in as Sam figures things out, much like we did through all of season 6. The first thing Sam can remember is that he woke up on a park bench with a couple of cops shoving a flashlight in his face, and he knocked them out cold, like without even thinking, and that's why he's being chased by the police now. And doing so, by instinct, just knocking out a couple of cops who were just trying to rouse him, Sam's kind of appalled at this instinct. Like, why would this be my instinct? Who even does something like that? The bartender insists that Sam should get to a hospital, that he needs to see a doctor. And he's like, no, I don't have time. Sam has this feeling that there's something he's got to stop, somewhere he's got to be. She's like, what, a wedding, a train? He's like, no, something life or death. It's something really important, and I just can't remember. Sam's looking around the bar and sees a bookshelf, pulls off an H.P. Lovecraft book, and he's like, no, this is relevant. It's Hunter of the Dark, the manuscript we saw Lovecraft finish in the previous episode. And as Sam realizes this is something important, it's a key of information, he unlocks a series of flashes of memories, Bobby, Dean, a motel called the Night Owl. And he almost passes out as he has these flashes. The bartender is insisting they go to the doctor because Sam is clearly having a medical issue, almost passing out. And Sam's like, no, do you have a computer? And he looks up that motel he saw the sign for and learns that it's relatively nearby. The bartender tries one more time to convince him to go to the hospital. He refuses, and she says, okay, well then I'm coming with you and I'm driving because you almost just passed out. I wouldn't be able to sleep knowing you were out there and something horrible happened to you because I just let you walk away. And she agrees to drive him to this motel two towns over. And he's like, I could just be anybody. I could be crazy. I could be, you know, you might be crazy for wanting to come with me. She's like, well, there's that, but there's also, I just have to know how this all turns out, who the hell you are. They arrive at the motel and she's like, well, where do we start? And Sam's like, ground floor, corner room, nearest to the fire escape. That's where I'd start. She's like, how do you know that? And Sam's like, I just do. That's ingrained in him, the way that his and Dean's shorthand and secret codes and stuff, working as a team their whole lives together, is just ingrained in a groove in his brain. They get to the door. Sam's like, do you have a credit card? She's like, why? Are we checking in? He just takes it from her and uses it to pick the lock on the door. Inside the room, the walls are plastered with seemingly unrelated photos and red string and pins and articles from all sorts of different disappeared people and bizarre acts of violence and maps of places and you name it. It's like a hunter's wall times 100. I've never seen them go this crazy on a room since maybe the pilot episode of the series, when John was using it to deliberately leave them like a flaming arrow to follow him. She finds an ID and says, well, it's nice to meet you, Jimmy Page. And then she finds another one, Neil Peart and Angus Young, all different fake IDs that Sam just apparently had lying there on the counter because they always do weird shit like that. And everyone watching should by this point be going, since when do they make such a mess of motel rooms like this? They're usually really careful about hiding stuff from like maids and anyone who might come into the room when they're not there. They don't just plaster walls like that. So this is already suspicious as to what on earth is going on, as they're both freaking out about all of this. And we see a picture of vampire fangs in the background. Sam focuses in on Eleanor Vizhak, a missing professor. And there's a photograph of her, and that also rings a bell for him. And he has another flashback. Sam, Dean, and Bobby find Ellie in an alley behind a dumpster, gravely injured. And she's like, oh, I guess I could have used your help after all. She tells them that they took me and I got away. The demon I could have handled, but the angel apparently got to her and she confessed how to get into purgatory, how to open that door. And she finally does tell Sam, Dean, and Bobby what is needed to open the door. Virgin blood, the blood of a purgatory native, which they've got plenty of now, as she looks down at the gash in her abdomen. Dean asks if they've managed to open the door yet, and Ellie says no, tomorrow during the eclipse. Which is very convenient that it was the day before an eclipse happened. Ellie apologizes, and Bobby's like, it's okay, just tell us where they are. And unfortunately, she dies before she can. And as they're mourning her, Cass appears behind them, saying that he's sorry that this had to happen. And they think he's not sorry at all. Cass tells them that Crowley got carried away, and Bobby charges at Cass, like, you son of a bitch, no, it wasn't Crowley. Ellie just told them it was the angel. Dean is harsh towards Cass. Like, you can't even see how totally off the rails you are. But Cass is just done, even trying to get them to understand. He's like, I've tried to tell you, but you won't listen. Cass tells them to just go home and let him do what he needs to do to stop Raphael. And Dean's like, no. And Cass says, well, then I wish it hadn't come to this. When this is over, I will save Sam, but only if you stand down. Like, there's not even an extension of friendship here. It's just, I'm going to break him, and if you don't get in my way, I'll fix him, but otherwise, screw you. And that's pretty harsh end to their friendship. That's the level of desperation Cass has achieved here. And again, they don't know the stakes. This whole defeating Raphael is absolutely meaningless to Sam, Dean, and Bobby. They don't know. They don't care. You have not told them the A word here. You have not said he will restart the apocalypse. It's all this season would have needed, and the entire season's misunderstandings would not have existed. He taps Sam on the forehead, and that's how Sam has ended up in the state he's in now. Cass has broken his wall. But Sam has picked up a few more clues. He knows his own name is Sam. The bartender asks Sam what he saw, and Sam's like, you're not going to believe it. It's like too crazy, and it's still kind of spotty. I was with two guys, and he refers to Dean as a male model type, and Bobby as an older guy. But he remembers the name Bobby, looks in a little book he's got there, and finds Bobby's address, Sioux Falls, South Dakota. Bartender is like, yeah, this is where I have to get off because I'm not driving you to South Dakota. And Sam's like, oh no, of course, I understand completely. Do what you have to do. She asks him how he's going to get to South Dakota, and he turns around and picks up the keys to the Impala, and he's like, I guess I'll drive. They go outside to find Baby in the parking lot, and Sam's like, oh yeah, that's mine. She's like, are you sure? And I'm like, Sam, are you sure? It's yours? Mm-hmm. I think it's Dean's. But anyway, Sam's all excited to get in the car and drive off to Bobby Singer's house in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. And she's like, I just have a bad feeling about all of this. Whatever you're looking for, I don't think you're going to like what you find. She starts going off about getting his head straight, and Sam hears some other sound. He hears something like in the distance, and his spidey senses go off, and he starts looking around and pulls her down just in time as somebody starts shooting at them. Sam looks up to see that it's him shooting at them. He's shooting at himself. The bartender is behind him calling his name, and it overlaps with Dean's voice calling out for Sam, because Sam is actually unconscious and locked back in the panic room again after whatever it was that Cass did to him. So now we, the viewers, are assured that none of what's going on in Sam's part of the story here is actually real. It's his brain trying to reassemble itself. And as Play With Fire plays in the background, Bobby and Dean have a little conversation. Dean has not been able to get through to Sam, can't figure out what's wrong with him and why he's not responding. But he also feels like he can't just sit there and wait. Dean wants to go find some way out in the world to help Sam. And Bobby's saying, yeah, we will help Sam, but we've only got 16 hours left until they pop purgatory, and then we'll have far worse problems on our hands. And Dean's like, well, we have no line on Cass or Crowley. Balthazar isn't even returning our calls, and we have no idea what is even happening to Sam. Bobby pours Dean a shot of whiskey and tries to calm him down. This is what Cass wants, for you just to be spinning your wheels like that. Try and think about what Sam would want you to do. And it's not get mad like this and just stew. Back inside Sam's hallucination, dream, the inside of his own head, he's driving Baby, and the same song is playing on the radio. Play With Fire, Rolling Stones. But it's sort of glitching out a little bit, and Sam's like, do you smell whiskey? Because Bobby and Dean are having a glass of whiskey right above Sam's head in reality, and he can smell that inside his mind, but he can't place it. So even though she didn't intend to travel with Sam to South Dakota, Sam is now insisting that that's where they're going. Now that they're both in the car somehow, we missed the point where they got in the car and drove out of town. Sam lied to her and said that he didn't see who was shooting at them, even though he saw perfectly clearly it was him. She just wants him to go to the cops, and Sam's like, no, we gotta get to my friends, they'll be able to help us. Even though she's scared, Sam refuses to turn around and take her home, insists that she is safer with him, and I think she's regretting all of her life choices at this point, even though we know she's a hallucination, and we know what really happened to her in reality, and why Sam's subconscious picked her out to be his little guide through this process. But Sam's vision whites out inside the dream because Dean is shining a flashlight into his eyes, trying to make sure he's still in there. Inside the vision, Sam is blinded by that light, slams on the brakes, gets out of the car, and is shocked because it was night and now it is day. And the woman tries to tell him it was always day. What are you talking about? It really was night. We saw exactly what happened. She makes like she's just going to walk off, like that's better just to walk back to town. And Sam hears a noise out in the woods and is like, get in the car. And he makes a motion over his shoulder like there's something in the woods, like you'll be safer in the car. And then he goes around to the trunk and discovers the weapons cache. The bartender actually just sits in the car as she watches Sam go off into the woods, with a sawed-off shotgun and a handgun and like, okay, why am I sitting here? And it's like, well, because Sam's mind won't let you go. You're a bit of guilt running around in his head. In woods that will look very reminiscent of purgatory in about a year's time are Sam in his brown jacket and the part of Sam who was soulless in a green jacket hunt each other through the woods. Soulless Sam confronts regular Sam, disarms him handily. Regular Sam is like, this can't be real, I'm tripping, you know, and finally figures out that he's dreaming, and Soulless Sam is very sarcastically informing him that that is correct. Sam in the brown jacket is basically Sam's soul. Sam in the green jacket is Sam without his soul. Soulless Sam is trying to convince his own soul that souls are weak, a liability, and you'd be better off without a soul. Soulless Sam believes that he should be in charge inside Sam's noggin and tries to kill him. Sam runs like hell and finds he has a mysterious gun still secreted on his person. It like appears in his hand. Sam proves that a soul is not a liability by setting a trap for Soulless Sam, convincing him that he'd already shot Sam by leaving his jacket behind, and sneaking around behind him and blowing him away. Shot him right in the back. As Soulless Sam lays dying, he tells Sam, "You think I'm bad? Wait until you meet the other one." And Sam is kind of horrified by that. And then a light is activated, and the soulless part of Sam is reintegrated into Sam's body. But in reality, where Sam is still lying on the cot in the panic room, his body starts thrashing and flailing, and Dean runs over to make sure he's okay, until he finally just lies still again. Sam emerges from the forest inside his dream and returns to the car, where the bartender is now standing outside the car, waiting for him. Sam tells her he remembers who he is now. "I remember the things I did this past year, and I remember you." She'd been held at knife point by a demon. Looks like a red-eyed monster, but I'm going to go with crossroads demon. As Sam closed in on him in her bar, the demon's like, "Stand back," or the girl gets it. And rather than worry about her at all, Sam just shot her and killed her to get to the demon. He's like, "There goes your leverage." Just one more fucked up thing that Sam did without his soul, proving that he's definitely not the best Sam. But back in the hallucination, the girl looks down and blood begins streaming down her shirt. And she tells him, "Didn't I tell you to turn back, that you wouldn't like what you found?" And Sam may not like this, and he may be very unhappy with himself that any of this ever happened or that she'd ever come to harm. But right, you can't run away from yourself. He at least gets to tell her that he's sorry. And she says, "Not as sorry as you're gonna be," and disappears. Back in the panic room, Balthazar has finally arrived and lets them know that the angel warding they've got going on in the panic room finally is correct and actually does keep out angels. He tells them also that he was delayed in coming to them because he was having second thoughts, considering just killing them instead of helping them, but has decided to help them. He gives them an address, 221 Piermont Avenue in Bootbach, Kansas, a town that in our universe does not exist. So just one more reminder that their universe is not our universe. Dean's like, "Okay, well, let me grab my stuff and you can zap us over there." Balthazar's like, "Oh, no, no. I'm betraying a friend here already. You can't ask me to do that. We've all stuck our necks out too far. Cass is a very powerful person to have crossed. I mean, Crowley's no slouch on being able to hurt you bad either. But Balthazar has gone as far into the betrayal here as he's willing to." So now they've got a choice to make. what to do with Sam while they drive out to Bootbock, Kansas from South Dakota, where they are now. Gotta cross the entire state of Nebraska first. And Sam, still unconscious, can't really just leave him there. Can't really bring him with. What do you do? Meanwhile, back in Crowley's lab, Cass is waiting there. He looks downtrodden, and Crowley brings him the jar of blood he needs for the ritual to open the gate of purgatory. Once Cass has the blood, Crowley is like, "You seem more constipated than usual." Like, Cass is not talkative at all. And Cass informs Crowley that he's renegotiating the terms. Crowley gets nothing. Because he's neither stupid nor evil, he's not going to give Crowley that sort of power. Crowley's like, "This is just unbelievable. Have you forgotten that I came to you with this deal? This was my idea all along." And Cass is like, "Here's your options. You either flee or you die." Crowley's like, "You can't just break a contract like this. I wouldn't break a contract like this." And Cass just reiterates, "Flee or die." And Crowley's like, "You just can't trust anyone nowadays," and flees. But of course, he's got a backup plan that he's rushing off to enact. Back inside Sam's mind, he's finally arrived at Bobby's house. But all the furniture is covered with white sheets, and there's cobwebbed candles burning everywhere. It's the only lighting. In the kitchen, there's like a little desk or table set up, and somebody sitting in shadows behind it. Sam demands their attention. And the figure moves. And of course we know it's Sam. There's a knife on the table by his hand. But he doesn't reach for it. Real Sam asks, "Which one are you?" And the one in shadow stands up so you can see his face. And it's all like burned and bloody. And he says, "I'm the one that remembers hell." And Sam lowers his gun. Like, oh my god, I can't shoot this guy. Back in the real panic room, over Sam's unconscious body, Bobby finishes packing up for their trip, packs a couple of angel blades, and tells Dean it's time to go. Dean leaves the note with the address of where they're going on it, begs Sam one last time to wake up, and leaves a gun there for Sam to bring with him, because he's hoping against all odds that Sam will wake up. Back in Sam's dream, the hell version tells Sam he was hoping that Sam wouldn't find him. And Sam's like, "Well, I've been here all along, haven't I? I'm actually down there in Bobby's because the whole time I've been smelling Old Spice and whiskey. Where else would I be?" Sam's logic in going to Bobby's in the first place was, if my body's here, maybe I can snap myself back into it. Hell Sam tells him, "Well, you have to go through me. You've got to put yourself back together again. Or you're never going to wake up." And of course, you know, nobody wants their hell memories, but it's still a part of who he is. Sam understands he'll have to remember everything that happened to him in the cage. The hell memories portion of him is like, "Don't do this. Just stay here. Go find that bartender. Go find Jess, even, because that's part of your memories. It'll be in here somewhere in your soul. Just don't do this. Just walk away." Hell Sam tells actual Sam, "You're not strong enough." And Sam's like, "Well, we'll just have to see." He makes it like a test of some sort of himself, like proof that he's worthy and good enough to take it. But Sam, of course, must do this. "You know why? I'm not leaving my brother alone out there. We've got to fight the good fight. He won't just give up." Hell Sam finally picks up the knife. Sam raises his gun again. Hell Sam's like, "I'm not going to fight you." He turns it around and hands it hilt first to Sam and tells him this is your last chance to just drop it and walk away and never have to suffer with these memories. And then just like with the soulless bit, the hell bit of Sam is reunited with his body, and in reality, he starts spasming again in the cot. Back at Crowley's lab, Cass is still sitting there looking mopey with his bottle of blood. And he has apparently paged Balthazar, who shows up, and Cass tells him, We've got a problem. Dean Winchester is on his way here. Cass's biggest issue with this is that somebody must have told Dean where they are. Cass takes it as a betrayal, and he wants Balthazar to investigate how this information leaked to Dean, and he feels sincerely betrayed by it. Cass is really struggling with this. He's like, he's doing his best in impossible circumstances, and he kind of is. He feels like all of this is solely his burden to bear, and that everybody else is plotting against him. Why would his friends do this if they were truly his friends? Why would anyone plot against him? It's like, Cass, we don't understand your motives because you haven't told anyone. Balthazar tries to reassure Cass, you've always got little old me, like I wouldn't betray you. And Cass disappears and appears directly behind Balthazar and stabs him through the back. Just the same way that Sam shot his soulless self through the back. He rather remorselessly just murdered what was his closest angel friend. For what? Proving that Cass is already off the rails. He didn't even need to be poisoned by all the purgatory souls or the Leviathan. That he'd already gone too far. This has already broken something deep inside of him. A moment later, the Impala pulls up outside. Dean and Bobby get out and discover that there's at least a dozen angels guarding this place. They have no idea how they're going to take out a dozen angels before they can even figure out how they're going to sneak into the place. They hear something as a giant cloud of demons descends on the place. They race to get into the car to supposed safety. Just in time for the demon cloud to come up and pummel the car and flip it over on its roof. Cass is downstairs reading over the purgatory spell with his jar of blood when he hears a battle break out upstairs. Screaming, wailing, banging noises. It's Crowley returned, and he wants to renegotiate their terms. Cass materializes behind Crowley and attempts to smite him, and fails, because Crowley is now under the protection of Raphael. Castiel tries to call Crowley a fool for thinking that he could work a deal with Raphael. Raphael will destroy him at the speed of thought, and Crowley's like, yeah, because you were such a straight shooter and dealt fairly with me. You broke our deal. Crowley's deal with Raphael was blanket protection from anyone who might threaten him. His seat on the throne of hell would be secure, regardless of him having to take on any of that purgatory power, in exchange for the purgatory blood and working the spell. Raphael is securing their own power base. If anyone's going to have that much power to be the new god, it's me. Cass tells Crowley that Raphael is going to bring the apocalypse. Crowley's like, yeah, it's no worse than what you were going to do bringing all these souls from purgatory over. It was going to be just as bad. I'm just picking the better deal of the two. One where I got nothing or one where I got blanket protection. I'll take that one. Crowley tells Cass he now has two options, flee or die. And Cass wordlessly tosses the jar of blood back to Crowley and disappears, just as the eclipse begins. They paint the weird purgatory door sigil on the wall, and Crowley reads the spell. Outside in the flipped-over Impala, while all of this is happening, Dean wakes up and Bobby stirs, and they sneak in while Crowley's still reciting. They take their only shot they've got. Dean flings an angel blade at Raphael's back, and Raphael just reaches up and catches it without looking, which is a badass maneuver. Crowley waves a hand at Dean and Bobby up on the stairs and flings them over them. A moment later, though, Sam wanders up outside, sees the flipped over, smashed up Impala, the building in the background, and staggers toward it. Like, how the hell did he get there? He's having repeated flashbacks to hell of himself burning and it's nearly disabling. So, like, how did he drive from South Dakota to Kansas without, like, dying in a car accident? But he is determined and pushes forward. Raphael looks very delighted as the spell comes to a conclusion. Like, here it comes. All that power is mine. I will get what I've always wanted. And then nothing happens. Crowley suggests that maybe he said it wrong. And Cass appears and says, oh no, you said it perfectly. You just used the wrong blood. Cass looks over at Dean as he gets to his feet, like, how could you? And Cass is still appalled that his friends, quote, betrayed him by trying to stop him. Crowley realizes they did their spell with dog blood. And Raphael's like, enough games, Castiel, hand over the blood. And Crowley's like, you idiot. He's already done his own spell. His jar is empty. He used the blood himself. There is no more. Crowley asks how his ritual went, and Cass just bows his head and lets a powerful light glow out of him, blinding them all. Crowley realizes he's kind of screwed and is like, yeah, goodbye, and leaves. Castiel let him go, but he's holding Raphael there, preventing Raphael from flapping away. And Cass does to Raphael what Lucifer once did to Cass. Kabloom. And Cass is content with this. Raphael is no more. Dean looks horrified. And Cass is like, you see, I saved you. Because that was Cass's mission from the beginning, to save Dean from Raphael's apocalypse. Dean still doesn't know that Raphael intended to run the apocalypse on him. And Dean tentatively and reluctantly agrees, yeah, you sure did, Cass. He's like trying to talk to the man like he's a walking bomb. Because he is. Cass is gloating a little bit. You fought against me. You doubted me all along. But I was right. And Dean's like, yeah, yeah, you were. But now that you got Raphael, maybe it's time to put all the nuke back in purgatory before you explode. Dean tries to convince Cass that all those souls are kind of scrambling his brain, that he doesn't know how dangerous it is. And Cass is like, oh no, they all belong with me. My work isn't done yet. Raphael had many followers, and I must punish them all severely. Dean then makes one final plea to Cass. There's bad water under the bridge between us, but we're like family once. I would die for you. I almost did a few times. So please, if that means anything to you, I've already lost Lisa and Ben. Probably lost Sam. Don't make me lose you too. And Cass is too far down his own rabbit hole to understand what Dean is saying. He's like, you're only saying that because I won. You can't handle the fact that I won and you were wrong, blah, blah, blah. No, no, Cass, no. And then Cass walks up to Dean and tells him, you're not my family, Dean. I have no family. And in the background, somebody picked up an angel blade. It's Sam. He's gonna try and stab Cass in the back. But nothing happens. Cass just reaches back and pulls the blade out. And I mean, honestly, if anyone had a reason or felt like they deserved to be able to stab Cass at least once this season, my God, that person is Sam Winchester. Sam has been fucked over 6 ways from Sunday by Cass this season, and all in the name of trying to protect Dean or do nice things for Dean, and it's just like, wow. He cavalierly tells Sam that the angel blade didn't work because he's not an angel anymore. He's their new god. And we get a series of Robert Singer patented extreme zooms up into all of their faces as Cass tells them that you will bow down before me and profess your love to me or I will destroy you. And that's where season 6 ends, with this massive cliffhanger. Is Cass really going to be the big bad of season 7? Well, no, he was the big bad of season 6, but sort of only retroactively. They're just going to kill him to punish him for all of this. And then we're going to get some really cheesy slime bags, like literally leviathans full of goo, as big bads for season 7. And everybody's going to regret having killed off Cass. But it does give us this major reason to continue exploring Cass as a character individually. It makes him just as fallible as Sam and Dean. He has now made a mistake just as big as both of them have, selling their souls and working with demons and starting the apocalypse and everything that they've all been through. They've all caused problems before. This really is no different. It just is what the show is. So get ready for one more episode with Cass and then 15 episodes without him and then more Cass again. But arguably, that stretch without Cass is equally responsible for us all giving so much care for him as a character later. Like, Dean pining for him for 15 episodes really adds some zest to his return, you know? We all really do miss him. He really is a loss felt by everyone. This is the beginning also of an arc where, as Dean said to Cass, don't make me lose you too. I've already lost Lisa and Ben and Sam. And like, over the course of season 7, Dean will slowly lose everything again. I mean, he really had already lost it before season 6 even started, but now he will actually feel the loss of it. And things are going to be stripped away from him one by one as he just watches helpless to stop any of it. Starting with Cass. So when the first thing he gets back in 17 more episodes is Cass, only to have him taken away again and then given back again, slightly broken, but you know, still Cass, it's a relief to him instead of being like this period of time where he would just be angry that all of this had happened in the first place. Instead, he has to really examine what that loss feels like. Amidst the loss of almost everything else, he's got nothing left to cling on to. It's just going to get worse from here. Season 7. Supernatural. We just keep watching this show because honestly, what else are we supposed to do? Don't really have anything else to say about this one because it's really just tying up season 6 and setting the stage for season 7. And I don't know, it kind of really does feel like a two-parter with this serious cliffhanger. Can't really summarize any of that until after next week's episode. Luckily, we don't have to wait 4 months plus for a hiatus to watch what the next episode's going to be, you know? We already know. We can just pop in the new DVD. So, next week, we move on to Season 7, Episode 1, Meet the New Boss, Cass. He's a terrible boss. God, imagine that as your boss. Yeesh. Anyway. Until then, you can find me on Tumblr at MittensMorgul or at SPNGeorge. You can find me on Discord and Blue Sky as MittensMorgul. Or you can email me at MittensMorgul@gmail.com. And I look forward to talking to everybody again real soon. And yeah, I've been on vacation all week, so I'm like shocked that I actually got an entire episode recorded. It's very short because I basically just zoomed through this episode because like it's my anniversary week, you know. I mean, oh, happy Destielversary as well, because that was a couple days ago too now. But the day after that is my actual wedding anniversary. I've been married 26 years. Huzzah. Anyway. Just thought I'd share something pleasant at the end of all of that, because that's pleasant. Anyway. I went out to dinner with my family. That was about it. We didn't do anything special. We just kind of like took the week off and just hanging out and like, I don't know. I think we're going out for ice cream tomorrow, because that's how sad and lame we are. That's fun for, I don't know. We're very boring people. What can I say? Anyway, have a good one, everyone.